The power of music cannot be denied. In fact, most of contemporary life is underscored. We listen to music to start our mornings, help us concentrate at work, push us to power through our workouts, unwind, and fall into a deep sleep. While the power of listening to music is undeniable, we cannot dismiss the power of playing and performing music. Project Best Life was lucky enough to speak to three local organizations that specialize in helping people find their way to music.
Joe Maniacci and owner of Allentown Music.
Thank you so much for meeting with me today. So in your own words, can you briefly describe sort of what Allentown Music does or all the services that Allentown Music offers?
Yes, Allentown Music is, I guess we would call it a full service combo music store where we sell a lot of guitars, but amplifiers, drums, keyboards, violins, but generally musical, any kind of musical instruments and accessories, including brass and woodwinds, orchestral, whatnot. Yeah, we try to have as much covered as any musician might need, any kind of supplies they might need. We try to have that covered. Sales, buy, sell, and trade. We also deal in new and used. We do rentals. We do repairs as well. We also do like guitar and bass and piano lessons currently. That's a good chunk of what we do.
That's a lot. Yeah. If someone were to step into Allentown Music, like what would you hope that they would feel?
I guess what I hope that they feel is, good. A lot of people actually, believe it or not, come into our store. It's, I think for some people, it's kind of their happy place, rough day of work or just their job in general or something. They come in and they see the instruments and they kind of forget about some of their troubles, I guess, and that makes us feel really great that we can be here for people like that. One, that we were providing a store they can go to locally and purchase these without having to go online or go very far away, especially if they live, in the city and close by. But there's the people that just come in for kind of, it's almost therapy to some people. So that's, I guess I hope that most people would feel that way, that they, they feel welcome when they come in and, they also, hopefully the musical instruments make them feel welcome too and happy. And I think a lot of people do.
Why would it be more important to, let's say, buy or test or even sort of just experience a musical instrument at a shop as opposed to just sort of buying it online?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think especially for, I hate to use the term uneducated, but like the beginner, the parent who doesn't know anything about an instrument and they want to buy it, that's the trouble we have nowadays is like the holiday season isn't what it used to be. Cause I think I'm just going to go order online. And then people come in to us, hey, we got this brand new, ordered it off the internet or new or used, and it doesn't work. I need something fixed on it. So a lot of times, and sometimes there's not really any fixing them. Sometimes there's, so that's the thing is with a musical instrument is, yes, some things you can buy online without worry. Some instruments there's lower risk because it's okay. I'm buying a Fender guitar and the quality, but no two instruments are the same. Even same guitar, same factory, made in the same day, are not 100% the same instrument. So it's and anything can happen to it in shipping. So. That's why we think it's important, to go into a store and try an instrument out. Me personally, I've never bought one myself off the internet, without trying first, because the feel is probably the most important thing. How does it feel? But is there anything wrong with it? And there's, even photos online can't tell you everything about an instrument. Can't tell you if it plays or not, And then there's quality of some of these instruments nowadays, what they call ISOs, instrument-shaped objects, which you see these really low prices online on some of these websites and people fall for it. And then they get them and they're not much more than wall decorations, I guess, so they're not really designed for playing. So that's why I think it's important to go into a store. Not only that, but, the information, the education you get from, like at least, especially in, for myself and my staff, we always try to inform as much as we can. We're not condescending or talking down on them, but we want to you're spending money on an instrument or you're spending money for your child. We want to give you some information that's going to help you get the most out of what you're buying, not have to spend money on repairs and, we want to last as long as possible and the child, the parent, or whoever it is to be as happy as possible with the purchase too. And
so if someone were to come into the shop, they would be sort of immediately kind of assisted with any sort of shopping needs that they may have or any questions that they may have?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that's something that, you might get some of that online, but, emailing somebody back and forth is not the same as talking to somebody right in front of you. So, and can demonstrate, we can often will demonstrate to somebody too, not only tell them, but show them, depending on what it is, So there's that. Yeah. There's also the service too, where, you buy something from us, you take it home, there's a problem with it, rent it, whatever. You can bring it right back in if there's a problem with it, and we'll fix it, swap it out, whatever needs to happen, instead of having to like email somebody, ship paying to ship it back, or not getting responded by somebody, So there is those risks too. We hear success stories of people shopping online, but we also hear a lot of horror stories from people too. So lower risk, I think, going into an actual store, especially like ours, where, we want people to be happy. We want to have a good reputation too. So there's that as well.
Well, you mentioned that you offer lessons. Do you offer them in-house or do you go to people's homes? How does that work?
Yeah, currently we offer them just in-house right now. We did stop when COVID hit, and we just started back up a few months ago. It was a matter of how comfortable are we, how comfortable are the students coming in, the teachers too. We Our old teacher never didn't decided not to come back, so we just finally got a new instructor to come in, and things are going well. And we may consider doing something like that, Zoom or house calls. But right now, I think most of the people that come in here usually, they want less to come in here for lessons because they want the one-on-one. It's nice when they come in too, because they, and they see stuff that they didn't know that they needed or wanted. But also they come in and there's something wrong with their guitar. We can fix it for them when they come in for their lesson. So there's that, which is going to help them in the learning process too. Something's not working right on your instrument, now you can't practice. Currently, everything's in-house as far as lessons. Yeah.
How might learning music help people be more mindful or happier?
From personal experience, at least, I mean, one thing, it certainly gives you something to do and you can progress that. Obviously, it's, not something just like a waste of time, but there certainly is like the cognitive. They say it certainly is great for learning. I mean, there's counting involved, but also it's something that may, when you play music, it makes you feel good. The downside is if you're trying to learn music and it's not going well, it can certainly be frustrating, sometimes stressful. It can, so depressing even. But for the most part, it's the benefits, the benefits, especially if you're actually learning, if you're practicing and you're progressing, it's a great feeling and it gives you something, and then there's, playing with other people, music with other people too, is a whole other feeling too, of which is usually a positive thing. That's the thing with anything. But yeah, certainly are risks involved with trying to learn an instrument, but mostly it's rewarding.
I'm sure that you have like a million success stories at your sort of offering lessons and stuff like that. Is there one that specifically sticks out in your mind?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, aside from like the success stories of people actually like with music careers, it's like just the people that are really enjoying it. Like, now I don't teach really too much, but like I started when we first opened up, I did, and then when we first started back up a few months ago before I got a new teacher after COVID, I was doing the teaching, and there's those aha moments when you get through, like you see somebody, if they finally understand something that's frustrating them, or something's wrong with their technique, it's not really good, and then like over the next week or two or however it is, all of a sudden you're like, yes, I can see that you're practicing and you're getting it, and now you can get better, because teaching is challenging but rewarding. Even though I'm not the most experienced at it, I've certainly done enough of it over the years to have that experience. Yeah.
If someone were a little nervous about taking lessons or sort of buying a guitar or any instrument for the first time, what might you say to them?
Most popular question is, what's the cheapest, guitar I can get? And it's like, I can show you the cheapest, but you probably want at least the second cheapest, at least, because sometimes if the quality is that bad, if there's, especially with guitar, you want to make sure that it's easy to press the strings down, the notes all sound properly and don't buzz, and they ring out properly, but it's got to be easy to play, hold a tune. I get people that are concerned with, oh, I like that guitar, it's pretty, or I like the color of it. That's great if you find one that plays good, that feels good and works well, and you like all that. But that second, go for playability and what's going to act, if it's not going to function properly, doesn't matter how nice the guitar looks, or how good this guitar might sound, if you're never going to learn on it because the strings are really high and it's going to hurt your fingers and you're never going to press them down to play it, doesn't matter how good it might sound. And I get people that like that, oh, this might sound good, but doesn't matter. When you're starting out, it's got to be easy to play. The other part about that too is, while we highly recommend a teacher, because there's nothing really that can really replace that one-on-one, having an instructor who can see how your technique is, correct bad mistakes, you know, right away. You can ask questions right away that they can answer. But I also tell people, learn any way you can. Nowadays, go on YouTube and buy some books. Try to learn by ear, whatever way you can learn, do it and practice as much as you can. But usually what we also try to tell people in the beginning is, you know, set small goals every day for practice. Practice every day. The every day is important, but you don't have to practice 10 hours a day. You know, 10 minutes a day is usually like a good goal to set, because that's easy. And then most people will find out a half hour to an hour just went by practicing, you know, whereas if you're like, I got to practice for an hour, and then you kind of, you know, you don't want it to seem like work. You don't want, you know, because it's supposed to be enjoying it, you know. But that's why sometimes I've heard people where like the teacher sets too high of expectations, and then it's overwhelming.
10 minutes a day is an hour a week, you know, like if you think about it that way.
Well, and that's what I always tell people too, is 10 minutes every day is way better than an hour once a week. So practicing for a full hour solid on Saturday or Sunday, but not touching it for a whole week is very bad. 10 minutes every day, at least you got that, you know, every day, you're that repetition in your brain and your fingers. So obviously we want people to practice more than 10 minutes a day, but it's the daily repetition, you know, and if it's something you want to do, you shouldn't be a chore, you know?
Well, and I'm sure too, even just 10 minutes a day with a guitar could certainly kind of, or any instrument, right? Just 10 sort of minutes, like you said, the time will fly by, but also it probably makes you feel better.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's the thing is, I mean, you know, such a thing, people go into careers for music therapy, and it's, you know, like you don't even have to need therapy to use music to be therapeutic, you know, every day, it really is. Yeah. And you know, it's one of those things that the more you play and the better you get, the more you're going to enjoy it, the more you enjoy it.
All right, we're at my last question. This is a series called Project Best Life. So I would appreciate it if you could use the sort of phrase best life in your answer. And so the question is, how does learning, playing, or performing music help you lead your best life?
To say best life, I mean, without music, I couldn't even see saying those, you know, two words together, you know, but you know that, but that's someone who grew up, you know, always listening to music and wanting to play and playing for quite a long time. But certainly it's part of that rewarding of you're learning something, but it's hard to, you know, that's the thing about music is it's hard to put into words sometimes, like a feeling you get, you know, like I know when I listen to music, it doesn't have to be the most complex, you know, it just has to like make you feel good. And it's hard to explain that feeling, but that's certainly, I think a way to lead a best life in through music is having it every day, you know, whether you're listening to music, playing it, whether it's just at home or performing or going to see live music. I know that, you know, people who they might not play instruments, but they always going out to see live music. They have to, because it's just one of those, you know, those things that like makes your life better. I know it was tough for people a couple of years ago when there was no live music. I know people who were finding it very hard because that was living their best life, is going to a club or a concert, you know, every day or a couple, at least once, twice a week or more, you know. And before I was too busy with the business and family and all that, I mean, that was me. I was going, you know, it was live music, and you know, as much as possible. Yeah. And as a musician, it's one of those things where it's like you have to play, you know, whether it's alone or with other people. And that's why I don't perform a lot myself. My bandmates currently don't live close by, but when we play together, there's that chemistry, a bond between two or more people when you're creating something, whether you're just reproducing it or actually creating your own music. It's very similar, you know, I would say probably to an artist, you know, making a painting. It's like you're creating something. Art is visual and whatnot, but for music, it's like you're painting time.
No, that's amazing. I'm an arts professor myself. I'm a theater professor. And so I know exactly what you're talking about. And painting time is such an amazing way of kind of putting that, or sort of riding the wave of time.
I would rather stare at a beautiful painting than staring at a blank wall. I'd rather be listening to music, preferably good music, but music than nothing at all. Now, you know, there are certainly times, maybe not 24/7, but, you know, for the most part on a day-to-day basis.
And if it's bringing you joy and happiness, how better to sort of spend the rest of your life, right?
Yeah. So you don't want to stop learning, you know, or practicing or playing if it's what you want to do and you're enjoying it and it helps bring your best life. Yeah. So absolutely.
My name is Griffin Brady, and I am an ethnomusicologist and a touring musician and educator. and the founder of the Sly Boots School of Music, Art, and Dance. I'm also the executive director of the Bernard Woma Dagara Music Center USA, which is a newly formed not-for-profit, which we started in honor of my late mentor, the great Bernard Woma.
Thank you. I actually crossed paths with Bernard Woma. I teach at Fredonia State University, and I remember him being here, and the drumming circle that he started here still exists. I don't know if that's the correct title of it, but that's how I refer to it.
Yes, absolutely. I met Bernard Woma when I was 16 years old, and it was at a day of percussion near my hometown. I grew up in Oswego, New York, and I was grieving the loss of a very dear close friend, one of my childhood best friends, and it was suggested that I go and see Mr. Woma play because he had a xylophone with healing powers. And my teachers thought, you know, this guy is clearly into music as the therapy. He's skipping all of his classes and hanging out here in the band room. You know, maybe he could benefit from meeting this fellow. And, you know, I had an out-of-body experience. Everybody in the room disappeared, and it felt as if I was connected to this music. And I had never seen an instrument like that before, but I knew I needed to learn more about it. And so that is what brought me to Fredonia. And in 2002, I graduated high school and went to Fredonia and quickly became Bernard's right-hand man. And I was there studying percussion education and performance. And before long, I was going into classrooms with Bernard, playing the supporting parts and the bell. And we hatched a plan, and I ended up going to Africa in 2004 to meet his family and study at his school called the Dagara Music Center. And 4 short years later, we hatched a plan to bring 15 members of his family, the Sakumu Dance Troupe, to the United States for the first time ever. I was the bus driver and the tour manager and the American liaison interpreter. And we continued that work right up until his death in 2018. So for over a decade.
For people who were not familiar, could you describe the Sly Boots School?
Yeah, the Sly Boots School of Music, Art, and Dance was basically created to help facilitate the work with Bernard. When the group would come over, you know, in order to get the company around to school, we needed to come up with something. And so I bought a short school bus off of eBay Motors, and we retrofitted it to be our tour wagon. And whenever we weren't on the road, you know, we had this Sly Boots School of Music, Art, and Dance where everyone would stay and where we would do community classes. And, you know, it wasn't a real official school of music like our beloved Fredonia School of Music, but rather one a little on the sly. And so here we were, you know, the idea was the dream didn't have to be simply a dream. We just had to be a little sly about it. You know, we had to be clever. We had to cut a couple of corners. And I happened to be playing in a band at the time called On the Sly. And Bernard and I and my On the Sly friends started an event called Sly Fest, which was a 3-day music, art, and dance festival which focused on bringing unlikely people together from around the world. And so the Sly Boots School was really, you know, just, it came up because it needed to. You know, we needed a bit of an institution over here that could, you know, help facilitate the work. And so it kind of modeled it after the Dagara Music Center in Ghana. You know, the main goal over there is cultural preservation of Ghanaian culture. And, you know, the main goal over here is kind of connecting the dots, you know, bringing cultural representation from Ghana and other places around to share their music and dance and to entertain, educate, and inspire, and ultimately to promote positive social change through cultural arts, education, and performance. And we really felt that this music and dance, this project could bring the world together on the sly, so to speak.
That's beautiful. Thank you. In your own words, could you briefly describe the musical form that you teach?
Yeah, I am a percussionist by trade. And so most of the music lessons that I teach is specific to that medium. I teach a wide variety of percussion from around the world. And I specialize in the percussion of West Africa, including djembe drumming and ewe drumming, panlogo drumming. My teacher, Bernard, was a master of the Dagara xylophone, which is considered the great-great-grandmother of our xylophone in marimba. And that is also one of the flagship elements of the Sakumu dance troupe from Ghana. There's many, many African companies around the world, but not very many of them play the djil because it's coming from a minority ethnic group in the upper west region of Ghana, and it's a very special instrument. And in fact, the very instrument that piqued my interest in African music in the first place. But growing up, I also played in all of the bands and orchestras and jazz band and marching band. And I'm also currently a marching band drumline instructor, and I help kids to prepare their auditions for going off to music school. And I teach music in a little private school here in East Aurora called the Mandala School, and that's more of a general music.
What would someone experience in a music lesson with you? Or if you have, let's say, sort of a drumming performance group, what might someone hear or experience either in a lesson or sort of seeing a performance?
Well, I play with a lot of different bands. Over the course of my career, I've played with over 100 different ensembles in a wide range of styles. For example, every Tuesday for the last 10 years, I've hosted a drum and dance class here in the city of Buffalo. Actually, 5 o'clock is a juggling class, and then 6 o'clock is an African drumming class. And then 7 o'clock is an African dance class. And so what happens is you get warmed up with the juggling, you come and you learn some new rhythms from Africa. And then my partner in crime, Eric Burkiti Nswade from Ghana, comes to teach the dance class. And so you can actually see how the rhythms that I have given to you turn into movement, and what the relationship is between the dancer and the drummer. And so you see the traditional, you know, art form in the context of a class.
You mentioned that sort of you had a healing experience hearing music for the first time. Do you think that music can be healing? And if so, how?
Yes, I definitely believe that music is one of the most powerful healing forces on the planet. I believe in it the way some people believe in fairy tales. This is something, it's very important to me. You know, it has given me a light in dark times, and I have seen it do the same for others. And it's a very powerful thing. Whether it is, you know, scientifically articulated, you know, how your brain is able to slow down and reach meditative states and allow calm to take your anxieties away, you know, or if it's just a simple, when you notice your spirit is uplifted, when you hear the sound of a beautiful song or a beautiful voice, palpable. It's something that you feel. It's something that you know. You don't need to be told that it makes you feel good because you hear it and you feel good. And, you know, every time, you know, we go to hundreds of schools all around the country every year, and the teachers are always amazed. They're like, how did you get all of those kids to be eating out of your hand like that? All of our troubled students that we can't get to sit still for 5 minutes, you had them on the edge of their seat for a whole hour. And for as much as I would like to take credit for it, it isn't, you know, me, you know, it isn't the ensemble. It is the music. You know, there's a real powerful thing there that unites all of us. And, you know, the music, it doesn't come from outside of us. It comes from inside of us. And every single person has that. You know, when you get together to celebrate it or to make music with somebody else, you make a union, and the result is greater than the sum of the parts.
Going right along with that, I'm interested to know what the benefits are for people who do, I think, even specifically the juggling class, into the drumming class, and then into the dance class. How have you seen that benefit people, or what have you heard back that they have said to you about how it benefits them?
Oh, yeah. We hear all the time, you know, people who thought that they couldn't do any of them and end up, you know, really enjoying the process of all of them. Juggling is very, you know, people think of it like magic, but really it's kind of the honest magic. You know, you're not tricking anybody. The trick itself comes from practice and meditative thought and flow. And, you know, it's really just a matter of repetition and mindful behavior that allows that trick to come up. You know, it's not smoke and mirrors. You know, you are looking at the end result of many, many hours practiced. And when it comes to coming together as a community, especially with what we've been through over the last couple of years, you know, it just feels good to gather and be with other human beings. There's something therapeutic about that also. And, you know, when it comes to drumming, group drumming, you know, we're hired to come in all the time to do team building exercises for corporations and things like this, because all you need to do is put a hand on the drum to create a sound. It's very accessible. So even people that, you know, are afraid or have never made music, or, you know, were told to only move their fingers but not blow into the clarinet when they were young, you know, they can come here with a fear of music and then realize right away that it can be a very joyous and fulfilling situation. And then as far as the dance is concerned, oh my goodness, it is like the grandmother of the Zumba. You know, this is the real deal. It's not only awesome to look like a dancer, you know, to hold your body in a way that is beautiful, but it's a great workout. And you're getting together with your friends and you're sweating and you're smiling and you're laughing. You're testing your coordination. You're making connections between your right brain and your left brain. And what's also awesome is you've got live drumming. You know, you're not just dancing, you know, to a radio. You're dancing with the drummers who are there playing very specifically prescribed rhythms that match with the movements that you are trying to do. And so you feel connected not only to your fellow dancers, but to the drummers and to your body. You know, when you get a movement to feel right, or when you get a rhythm to feel right, or when you're juggling three balls and they all do what they're supposed to do, it's exciting. It's so exciting to see it come together in the way, and it does. It feels like magic, but really, it's hard work and coordination. You know, at the Sly Boots School, we love to see students reaching that level. You know, the level they thought they couldn't obtain. They walk in the door with no expectations, and they walk out the door with new goals, new trajectories, new hope for what they want to practice tomorrow.
Fantastic. Thank you. This just brings me to my last question. And if you could use the sort of phrase here, this is for a video series called Project Best Life. So if some way you could find to use the phrase best life in your answer, that would be amazing. But how does learning, playing, or performing music help you lead your best life?
I feel like I am living my best life when I am able to inspire those around me to live their best life. I think it's important to, you know, remain curious about art forms and about cultures, about people. You know, there's so much that you can be taught. You know, even if you are the teacher coming to this class, you are taught all the time by your students so much if you're open to it. And, you know, if you could go anywhere in the world and you would be hard pressed to not find drumming and dancing of some kind. And so in a way, this is kind of a golden ticket to anywhere in the world that you're curious enough to explore. Anywhere where you're bold enough to travel, there are experiences there waiting for you that are going to enrich your life. And so for me to live my best life, you know, it's about remaining curious. It's about taking the flame that has been given to me and sharing that flame and allowing the light and beauty of this music and dance to provide warmth and to provide hope for future generations, provide a more understanding, compassionate world to bring our children into.
Thank you. That affected me greatly. Thank you very much for saying that. And thank you for your generosity today with this interview. Research has shown that music affects the brain and can reduce anxiety, blood pressure, and pain, as well as improve sleep quality, mood, mental alertness, and memory.
So I am Dr. Robert Strauss, and I am artistic director of the Buffalo Gay Men's Chorus.
Excellent. So Rob, in your own words, could you briefly describe what your duties as the sort of director of the Buffalo Gay Men's Chorus entail?
So as artistic director of the Buffalo Gay Men's Chorus, there are a lot of things that fall under my umbrella, for sure. Obviously, I choose the music and conduct the concerts. I say obviously as if that's a small task, coming up with the themes and finding music that will sound good doing and will interest the members and interest the audience. But also I deal with if there are costuming issues, I secure the venues, create the rehearsal tracks for members to use, and also use other skills as needed. In a small organization, we know that the roles aren't always so clearly defined because there's so much work to be done. And if there's something I can do, you know, I feel like I have a good rapport with audiences. So I sort of also serve as MC of our concerts. I have a good handle on social media. So sometimes I serve as social media director of the group as well. But whatever I can do to help this organization do its best work, I'm happy to.
What would someone experience kind of in, I'll say, in a rehearsal or a typical season with the group?
So when someone sings with the chorus, they would be attending rehearsals. We rehearse on Tuesdays, typically 7 and 9:30. My expectation typically is that I'm expecting to work with people who don't have much experience reading music, but love to sing. Certainly, I have people in the room with me who do read music very, very well, and some who read music a little bit. So there are, I vary the rehearsals partially for my own attention span, I suppose. But sometimes we'll be working on vocal technique, we'll be cleaning up notes and rhythms, we'll be reading through text, we'll be talking about the meaning of the text, we'll be drilling parts separately. So there's a lot of variety in a rehearsal so that people, well, not just so that they don't get bored, but I think that we learn more securely and more quickly by digesting smaller portions at a time. And as we get closer to the concert, we run more pieces and longer chunks of pieces and start to get a sense of the flow. You know, we're singing right notes and rhythms, but we're singing the meaning and communicating the meaning of the texts and just building up endurance and excitement.
How might singing in a chorus or choir or just learning music in general help people to be more mindful or happier?
So I think that singing at all or singing in a group can help people's mental health and well-being in a lot of different ways. I would say just the sort of, and this is as a, I'm an extroverted introvert, so I want to be invited to the party, but I don't necessarily want to go. But just interacting with other human beings with similar interests, that being singing and perhaps the mission of the group. But a large part of singing is breathing. And so we're all breathing together and being mindful about our breathing. And I don't really ever talk about that in a mindfulness way, but just the act of doing it and being deliberate about how we're doing it. But we're also communicating with each other about, well, how does this text make you feel? Why do you feel like we're singing these words? Or, you know, sometimes we're singing songs just because we want to sing these songs. What does it mean for a group like us to sing Abba's Dancing Queen? I don't want to say that that's an insipid text, but it's fairly straightforward. But there may be as part of a discussion of what it means to us to sing that, we learn more about each other and have more empathy for different points of view, even within the context of people who presumably have a lot of the same ideas and belonging. And then ultimately, the thing that I love most about singing, and I already mentioned I'm an extroverted, I don't sing in the concerts. Obviously, I'm the conductor, but I am a singer first. And I think that's what I bring to the group. But it's a way to communicate with the audience. They love looking out and seeing people smiling as a result of our concerts. I don't want to say they love looking out and seeing people crying because that makes us sound like we're inhuman. But if the concert is meant to move people and they are moved, that has an effect on the singers. And, you know, when I'm conducting, I'm facing away from the audience. So I get to enjoy their response to it. And they're just so proud of what they've done and what been able to accomplish. I think it does make them happier and more, I don't want to say more complete, but that's all I can think to say in this moment.
The group is the Buffalo Gay Men's Chorus. Who can sort of audition or who can participate within the group?
So the Buffalo Gay Men's Chorus is for singers. It's open to anybody who can sing tenor, baritone, or bass. Gender expression and sexual orientation are not a consideration for our singers. And that's always been the case with the group, I would say. There have almost always been straight allies who've been singing with the group. So they are more than welcome and appreciated. The group is more about the mission, about being inclusive of LGBTQ plus people and rights and missions and agendas or whatever word you want to use for it. Just the activism for LGBTQ plus individuals. But again, you don't have to be under that umbrella to sing with the group. You just have to agree with and support the mission that's behind it. So we've had straight individuals, we have non-binary individuals who have sung with us even in just the last concert. And so that shouldn't be a deterrent. Nor, by the way, which I don't think was part of the question you were asking me, but I think I've included in some of my other answers, you don't have to think you're a good singer and you don't have to read music. I want people who think they're good singers because they're useful and helpful as sort of leaders in the group. And the people who read music, again, are able to lead. But we all bring strengths, you know, and passion to this. And it's really my job to make the group sound good. And whether that be the way that I help people to learn the music or help people to produce the sound in a healthier way. But the beauty of the chorus is mixing all the sounds together, mixing all the ingredients. I mean, maybe none of us wants to just eat a spoonful of flour, but you put that flour into cookie dough and I will eat it by the pounds. So if you think you sing like flour, I think is what I'm saying, then please join the chorus because we have plenty of sugar and vanilla and milk, but we can always use more dry ingredients. I don't know where I went with that, but I love what I said.
That's great. Yeah. One thing that I do, that I will ask for this is that I'm sure some members of the group have had kind of like year-long commitments to the group. And I'm sure that relationships form, not romantic relationships, but just friendships, connections form, because I think there's something really impactful about kind of a group meeting together, working on a sort of a shared goal or task or objective. Do you have anything to say or add about that?
So it's certainly true that bonds between members, friendships do erupt, exist, happen. There are members who have sung with the group since its inception in 2001. You know, they bond through the common experience of these shows. And I love when I've worked with the group since 2019. So there's a large part of the history of the organization that is without me, sadly for them. But, you know, they love sharing these stories and sharing these memories. You know, it's sometimes people, I don't want to say that they don't get along with each other because they do, but two people you wouldn't think would have all that much in common, you know, just bonding over this memory of this particular performance or this particular piece or even social events, because it is our primary, I would say, as artistic director, our primary goal is the music, is the performance aspect of it, but we're also a social organization. So it's interesting to see, you know, when new members come in, you know, you worry about cliques or gaggles of people and that being exclusive or exclusionary. You know, and certainly, of course, the people who've had these shared experiences sort of necessarily doesn't include people who weren't in those experiences, but they really are a warm and welcoming group of people, and they're so excited to share this group with people. So just to see new people come in and interacting with the legacy members and with the people who've sung for 5 years and so on and so forth. And I think that, yeah, bonds are built. I mean, if you're coming into the chorus looking for a date, I can't promise that will happen, nor do I necessarily want that kind of drama going on in the rehearsal. But for sure, friendships are made and built, and that just makes us stronger performers anyway.
So my final question here, this is for a series called Project Best Life. So if you could use the phrase best life in your answer, that would be amazing. But how does learning, playing, or performing music, or specifically singing with the group, help you lead your best life?
I feel like being a part of a group like this, and specifically the Buffalo Gay Men's Chorus, helps us lead our best life in a lot of different ways. I mean, there's the aerobic exercise part of it, that we are having to take deep breaths and release muscles that in the course of a stressful day lock up. They are the antithesis of good singing. So through my work and our work in the group, we're physically helping to lead our best life. But I think there's also the emotional part of it, that we are putting ourselves into the text and exploring how we're responding to pieces and how we're interacting with each other and finding ways to build rather than break down connections with people. Music is very mathematical and it's also very creative. So, you know, it's using different parts of your brain. So, you know, your body, your brain, your spirit are all being exercised and stretched and developed and used in ways when you're singing in a group like this. And I think in many, many ways that I'm not even thinking about right now, I just know, having had the experience of working with these people and them coming off of a performance where maybe they went into it feeling a little tentative about things and just so proud of themselves for the connection they had with each other, with what they were able to do with their bodies and their voices and with their minds and their spirits. I think I'm so lucky to get to see them. I think, you know, it's not about me in these moments, but I am also living my best life in those moments. And it doesn't have to be performance. It can be in a rehearsal when we discover something new about our voice or about how we interact with each other or how a text makes us feel. Or I didn't know how much I related to Abba's Dancing Queen, to bring that up again, or what that can mean for me. It's just really exciting. And I think that it absolutely does.
Great. Those are my questions for this short interview. Is there anything that you feel just about sort of the idea of Project Best Life has been left unsaid that you would like to say?
Singing in an ensemble like this and a group that's mission-driven instead of genre-driven. So therefore, we'll sing in a lot of different styles. We're also exercising that. So there are lots of ways that it leads to, hopefully, our best life or a better version of ourselves than we were when we walked into the rehearsal / performance / meeting / potluck dinner.
You can learn to play music at any age and any level of experience. Whether it be picking up a guitar, singing with a chorus, or performing with an ensemble, playing music is a great way to live your best life.